We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message. Wayfair's got style tips for every home. This is Nicole Byer, helping you make those rooms flyer. Today's style tip, when it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals. Go wild! Like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Ooh, fierce! This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Let me tell you something that you already know. Maybe you forgot. Maybe you don't know this. Maybe you're thinking about it right now. Who knows? I'm going to tell you about five extremely trite and extremely overused phrases that we human beings just seem to love to throw around. There's a lot of reasons that we keep these throwaway phrases right in our pocket or right in the tips of our tongue that we can throw into situations and incorporate into conversations whenever we don't have anything more clever to say or more appropriate to say or more profound to say. We can just default to one of these little sayings. So what's the point? Why would I be thinking about these things? Well, I walked into one of my favorite coffee shops this morning to enjoy a cup of coffee, but also to do a little bit of work, to get a little bit of work done. And they were slammed. They were slammed. There's a drive-through at this location and just foot traffic and all the things. So all the baristas are running around like chickens with their heads cut off or their hair on fire. See, I'm already doing it. I'm already using these trite phrases. Wow. Shame on me. Gosh, unbelievable. Happens to everybody. But I was joking with the young lady and I said, oh gosh, it's so important to be grateful for everything that we have, for every moment that we have, for every cup of coffee that we get to drink, that you get to pour. Got to have an attitude of gratitude. And of course, I was effing around. I was trying to be glib and funny, and it worked. We had a good laugh. But that's what got me thinking about this. What are some of those big throwaway terms that we really like to use a lot? And what makes them throwaway? Where did they come from? All those kinds of things. So let's just get started. The first one that I want to talk about is you got to fake it till you make it. Got to fake it till you make it. Have you ever thrown this one out there? How often are you throwing this one out there? Are you still faking it till you make it? I know that I certainly have. Certainly early in my career, you want to put your best foot forward. And if you have no experience, you want to be faking it like you have experience. If you don't really know what it is that you're doing, you want to still project that you know what you're doing, because at some level, none of us really know what it is that we're doing. And as you move along the path to mastery / expertise, at the top, you realize, I don't know anything at all, and that there's still so much left to be learned. So in a way, we're all faking it till we make it. And even when we make it, then the new it is just a different level. We're leveling up. We are doing all of that stuff. And I'm sure that there's a million business school terms that I can throw out there. Like, for example, when there's a paradigm shift, we're all going to have to level up. We're all going to have to level up. You get the idea. So faking it till you make it. What you doing? You're faking it till you make it. There's just the problem with it is it just, and the problem with all of these is that they become inauthentic. They become somewhat pretentious and it's just kind of a drag. So this one is fake it till you make it. It is pretty similar, Jermaine, to maybe the greatest slogan of all time, which is just do it. And it's an amazing slogan that sold a lot of shoes, a lot of gear over time. And I think that we all appreciate the idea behind just do it. You got to just get out there and do it. You got to go make it happen. But the problem with that is The problem with that is if I don't know how to just to do it, if I don't know how to do it at all, then I can't just do it, can I? And all too often, I observe that when people are saying just do it, it's because they lack the ability to teach the person, the subject of the just do it, they lack the ability to teach them, or they lack the wherewithal, the capacity to do the training or the teaching to get people up to speed so they can actually go out there and get it done. So fake it till you make it, just do it. Become pretty ubiquitous, and they're a lot more slogany than they are helpful. So I don't know. Those just kind of just do it, fake it till you make it. Certainly all things that we're aware of, but kind of get under my skin.
Fake it till you make it, blah, 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 blah. Got to just get out there and make it happen.
Well, okay. Or screw off. Who's to say? Truth's in there somewhere. The next one is annoying because it's true. And that is, be the change that you want to see in the world. I mean, that's a bumper sticker that we've all seen on the back of somebody's vehicle that likes to do yoga or burns incense or really likes whales or wants to save all the trees. And that's me. I like yoga. I enjoy incense. I like trees and I like whales. I interact with trees a lot more than I interact with whales. But when I know of whales, I'm interested in making sure that they're around. So be the change that you want to see in the world has become a throwaway trite BS term. But again, it is the truest one that probably exists on this entire list. Because if you wanted the world to be a kinder place, you practicing and being kind to everybody that you encounter would in fact accomplish that goal. If we were all just kinder to ourselves and to others, the world would in fact be a better place. So taking it upon ourselves to hold that standard is amazing advice. It's often attributed to Gandhi, and I think that that's an appropriate one because here's a gentleman that, at least from what I know of Gandhi, is certainly true. Brought about a revolution in a somewhat nonviolent, or I believe nonviolent, means. So the more we can live by our values and, number one, have values and then actually live by them, what a beautiful thing. The butterfly flaps its wings and two people kiss, or an earthquake happens. I don't know how that works. I forget. Probably both things. A butterfly flaps its wings in South America and people in Iceland kiss, but people in Greenland get hit by a volcano because of the butterfly's wings. Anyway, that one irks me because it's true. It's everything that we want is within our grasp. If we would all, and this is me too, if all of us would simply start acting the way that we want to see the world be more like, what a wonderful world it would be. All right, next.
When it comes to Father's Day, dads want steak. And the experts at Omaha Steaks are making it easy for you to deliver uncompromising quality with gifts that are sure to make his day. Plus, get an extra $35 off with code THANKSDAD when you shop at omahasteaks.com today. But don't wait. Father's Day is June 15th. Shop now at omahasteaks.com and get an extra $35 off with code THANKSDAD. Minimum purchase may apply. See site for details.
This podcast is sponsored by IQ Bar.
Hi, I'm Will, and I created IQ Bar to empower doers like you with clean, delicious, low-sugar brain and body fuel. Millions of people rely on our protein bars and hydration mixes to win their day. Turns out Thomas Keller, Michelin star chef of the French Laundry, is one of them. We've teamed up with Chef Keller to craft a bar and hydration mix that marry world-class flavor with exceptional nutrition. Our special edition salted caramel chip bar delivers all the decadence of a fine dining dessert plus protein minus sugar and carbs. And our zero sugar yuzu mango hydration mix packs an authentic citrusy punch and a mental boost from lion's mane and magnesium. The best part? 10% of sales go directly to Chef Keller's nonprofit that supports aspiring young chefs. Great taste, great nutrition, great mission. Total no-brainer.
Go to iqbar.com today and enter promo code KELLER20 to get 20% off all iqbar products plus free shipping. That's iqbar.com, promo code KELLER20.
Things can always be worse. Number one, it's certainly true because things can most certainly always be worse. You got a headache? Well, guess what? You could, you know, lose your wallet. Got in a car accident? Well, guess what? A bird could fly over and crap on your head at the same time. You know, things can always be worse. But here's the problem. It's just so negative. It's so glass half empty kind of thinking, which in itself is one of these. But it's true. There's a lot of danger. And so many of these we just throw away, which is the whole idea, is that these are trite, throwaway little terms. And a lot of the time it's tongue in cheek. But this is also super true. If you are of the mind that things can always be worse, you are setting yourself up for less, for suboptimal kind of results. It's been around for a long time. I think people have been talking about this stuff in religion and in folk wisdom and just centuries of literature, and that there's always been an idea that even when you go back to the Bible, the idea that who has been given much, more will be given, and who has little, even that will be taken from them. The idea of misery loves company, the idea of crabs in a bucket, the idea of just being a negative person, that you go through life and you have a choice between being positive or negative. It's what's your charge kind of a thing, which also could be included on this list. You're either charged negatively or you're charged positively. And obviously, you're a dynamic human being who's not a non-playable static character. You are capable of being equal parts positive and equal parts negative. But the problem is it can be dismissive of real hardship. And it can certainly lead into the idea that, and this has been studied, that if you are overly pessimistic, that there are negative health outcomes. You will be at a higher risk for health problems like cardiovascular disease. People with negative outlooks have higher levels of stress, which result in poor physical health over time and poor immune functions. You're familiar with the idea of a self-fulfilling prophecy, whereas if you're walking around thinking that you're going to get shit on or that bad things are going to happen to you, odds are those bad things are going to start happening to you because you're going to start noticing, looking for them, even seeking them out. There's an idea called learned helplessness from a gentleman named Martin Seligman. And this is really, 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 really powerful. It talks about how people that perceive themselves as powerless become powerless. If you give away your personal agency, well, then you've given away your agency. You've lost the entire game. This is why I dislike it so immensely when we as a culture talk about how there's some invisible boogie man or boogie woman, boogie person out there who's going to get us. It's the man. It's sexism. It's racism. And these are all real things. That sexism exists. Racism exists. But that doesn't mean that I want to go through my life thinking that there are forces, nefarious forces at work trying to hurt me, hold me down, keep me down, all of those things. So that's what this is talking about. So if I'm wired to think that I can always get a lot worse, I'm like Eeyore walking around just being super, 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 super negative. So I think it's pretty obvious that if we do catastrophize the situations, the scenarios of our life, that it's just not going to work out very well for us. So there's a lot going on here for sure. I mean, it's confirmation bias. We're perpetuating negative things. None of it is good. I think that's foundationally it. None of it's good. We all have a lot going on anyway. Life is challenging. There's no two ways about that. But I'm of the mind that my future is going to be way better than my past. And if I'm of the opposite mind, well, then it's going to be. If you believe that your past is way better than your future is going to be, well, you're going to be stuck in the past. You're going to be longing for your past. You're going to be afraid of the future. You're going to be looking for negativity, and you're going to find it. And it's going to find you. And that's bad. So knock it off. Next, do what you love, and you'll never work a day in your life. Ugh. Ugh. Do what you love, and you'll never work a day in your life. This is like when you're talking to some a-hole, and like, hey, how's it going? And they say, living the dream. Ugh. Man, do I hate that one. Living the dream. It's like when people say, you know, can you do this? They say, absolutely. Well, nothing is absolutely, and nobody's living a dream, because we all recognize that life is filled with good things and bad things. And the idea that if you do what you love, you'll never work a day in your life is total bullshit, because there are parts of everything that we do and parts of our lives that are tedious. Now, I get it if you can shift the thinking, and that's really what this is all about. And I'm gonna circle back on that idea, because I think it's so worth talking about. But the idea that, you know, you do what you love, you'll never work a day in your life, it's way, and this is coming from me, I'm a super reductive person. I try to boil things down as just nothing. I want to turn all that water into steam so there's nothing in there. I want to reduce everything down to nothing, because I'm not very smart. That's just me. It's just way too reductive. Do what you love, you never work a day in your life. And that's demotivating for so many people, because not enough of us are doing things that we enjoy. Way too many of us are doing work that we find to be completely hollow and mundane and soul-crushing versus something that we actually love. I'm awash in TPS reports and freaking AI and, sorry, AI. And Excel documents and Zoom meetings and geez, oh, Pete, this is not necessarily work that I love. Therefore, I am working every day of my life. And it also supposes that work is a bad thing. And I certainly don't think that it is. But here's really the big problem is the same as find your passion. You got to be passionate about the work that you're doing. That's just a myth. Can you become passionate about it? Yes. But to think that I am supposed to automatically just be doing work that I love and then I don't ever have to work, and then I'm going to find passionate work and meaningful work just automatically, I don't think that that happens. Here's how it does happen, though, is you decide that you want to focus and get really good at whatever it is that you are doing. And this is 100% possible. Just because I'm crapping on the idea that if you love what you do, you never work a day in your life, I'm crapping on the superficial nature of that. I believe, not unlike be the change that you want to see in the world, that it is extremely possible to create a life and to create a vocation / career / job that you truly do enjoy, or at least parts of it, and then you will feel like you are doing meaningful work. But you can't just step into that right away. If you have, credits and congratulations to you. But for most of us, it's not easy. It's going to take work, and I need to figure out how to do it. So the first step is get serious about it. Get really serious about it. What happens then is you're going to get good at it. And when you get good at it, you can become more interested in it. You're going to get really good at it. You're going to become awesome at it, achieve mastery, become an expert. And then you know what's going to happen? You're going to become passionate about the work that you're going to do, because you're going to have proven to yourself that you can focus and you can get good. You can, and when you get good, then you have a bigger impact. And when you have a bigger impact, that's going to be fulfilling and feeling, and you're going to feel a sense of purpose, and you're going to feel a sense of enjoyment that you are doing something that is of value, that is meaningful, and you're going to be really good at it. So don't just stand there and say, you know what, when you do what you love, don't know to work a day in your life, or I'm living the dream. Well, we all don't think that that's true, because people that really believe what it is that you're saying don't say shit like that. So there you go. I hope that, the whole idea is how do we figure out what we want our life to look like and start moving more in the direction of that. There's this amazing idea from Nietzsche, that of eternal recurrence. And I know that this has been not necessarily dominating my thoughts as of late, but it's certainly occupying a good portion of my thinking because I think it's valid and very worthwhile. The idea of eternal recurrence is simply that you live a life that you would happily relive exactly the same over and over and over again. What do you think about that? It's like, oh, man. I don't know that I want to relive this program again. What about parts of it? So here's what I've kind of landed on at this point. Is really hard for me to get my brain around how do I live a life that I'd happily relive again? Because that's a lot. At this point, it's 46 years. A lot packed in there. So I can't get my brain around that. But I can get my brain around what's a perfect day look like? I can get my brain around what a really good day is. And I can get my brain around understanding and looking at, okay, what would a perfect day be like or what a perfect day is like? And how can I take some of those elements, maybe one, maybe two, and incorporate them into my everyday life? Is that possible to do? Sure. Yeah. So you talk about having a dream job. You talk about having a dream life. You talk about ideal scenarios and situations. You say, I'm living the dream. When you love what you do, you never work a day in your life. Well, when you love your life, then you would happily relive it over and over and over again. Now, I can't go from zero to that. I can't go from hating what I'm doing to loving every aspect of it. Because there's certainly a lot of tedious elements to the work that I'm doing. I've got to, do the dishes. What I want to do the dishes for every day? Do I want to keep doing laundry? Da, da, da. You get the idea. So instead of trying to do that, think about what an amazing day looks like or a collection of days. Think about when you're on vacation. Think about just a Saturday, a great Saturday. Think about those parts of your work that you really do enjoy. So hopefully you can find some things. And then try and piece that together. Say, okay, yeah, okay, that looks like a pretty good day right there. That looks like a pretty good day that I would happily do again. And okay, now I'm a little closer. That's pretty good. How can I do that again? You get the idea. And I think that is the trick right there. And that has really a lot of value. And it's not easy to do that. It might not even be possible. But the trick is to slowly be working towards it. Life is it's really, really short. It's fleeting, but it's also really, really, really long. It's way too long to be doing things that you hate. So how can I figure out what things I do enjoy or I love and how do I do more of those things? And if we're able to figure that out, I think that that's a really, 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 really powerful thing. So, all right, next. A penny for your thoughts. A penny for your thoughts. This one isn't necessarily trite. It's just a popular saying. So, but I like the idea of it. And when I researched it a little bit, I liked it even more. And the idea is just simply that dates back to the 16th century. And instead of just asking somebody what they're thinking, which I think is a terrible question, that's why I included this. I'm now remembering back. I can remember when I was a teenager and I was dating, you have a girlfriend or a boyfriend or whatever. And maybe it was just the people that I was with. Maybe I was a poor communicator, but people would ask me, my girlfriend would ask me, what are you thinking right now? What are you thinking right now? And it was just such an annoying question because I've got a lot of thoughts in my mind and I don't necessarily want to share them with another person. So I thought that was always a really stupid question. But maybe just because I just didn't want to share my thoughts. Maybe it was a me problem, as most of my problems are. In fact, probably all of them are all me problems. But a penny for your thought is a much more, it's a better way to ask that question. And again, from the 16th century, the earliest recorded use of it was from Sir Thomas More. He said, "I pray you, tell me your mind, and I will give you a penny for it." So there you go. So that's the idea. It's way better than asking, "What are you thinking?" It's way more poetic and thoughtful. It's a touch of curiosity and warmth, whereas just saying, "What are you thinking?" can feel a bit direct or maybe a little bit even transactional. So the idea of paying for somebody's thoughts, it's fun. It's a little metaphorical twist. So that's a bit of a good thing. So if that were in the 1600s, 1522, for example, what would that penny be worth today? If Thomas More was willing to pay you a penny for what your thoughts were, how much do you think it is? It's about $2.50. So it's pretty good. Pretty good right there. All right. I think we've got one more for you. You can't have your cake and eat it too. You can't have your cake and eat it too. Now, this is way more layered than I had necessarily realized. The idea is that you can't have two conflicting things at the same time because you have ownership of the thing, and then you cannot also at the same time possess the thing. So you can't have your cake, which is possess it, and then consume it. Those two things cannot be happening at the same time because it's no longer available in the original form. This is also from the 16th century, crazily enough, from Thomas More as well. What a smart Mark Twain-ish kind of a character he was. And the idea was that you can't have your cake and eat it too. It's simply that having is possessing, eating is consuming. So you use it up. Once the cake is eaten, it's no longer available or doesn't exist to be had in its original form. So the idea is simply that we have to make choices and or sacrifices, and that life is all about being thoughtful, intentional, mindful, and considering the trade-offs. You want the benefit, but what's the trade-off? Because there's a cost to everything. So there you go. There you go. I thought that those were solid. What do you think about those? Do you have a favorite annoying phrase that people like to throw around? Do you have an attitude of gratitude throughout the course of your day? Are you faking it till you make it? Are you able to just do it? Can you have your cake and eat it too? Penny for your thoughts. Hit me up. Let me know what you think. As always, do your part by doing your best.